Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Hall. Mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Well, obviously they're not signed, but I really put myself in a position where I can only worry about, and you guys hear me saying it, about the guys that I have. You know, I know it affects them all as individuals looking forward and things of that nature. But realistically, I mean, I really do have to stay focused on the guys that I have.
Mulligan Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's Rick Renteria. And everybody at camp is being asked questions about Manny Machado in particular. And I don't know, maybe if you leave a locker for the guy, there's going to be a question. Who knows? Let's ask our friend Chuck Garfine, White Sox reporter, pre- and post-game, NBC Sports Chicago. Hey, Chuck, how are you?
Hey, Chuck.
I'm good. How many Manny Machado questions are you going to ask? I put the limit at three.
Okay, so if he signs with the Padres, are the Padres interested in John Jay and Yonder Alonso for Fernando Tatis Jr.?
Wow. There we go. But you know what? The Padres are kind of in a similar situation as the White Sox, because Tatis Jr. is their shortstop of the future. And if Machado is making a demand that he wants to play shortstop, what do they do about that? And that's a situation that the White Sox would have with Tim Anderson. Now, if his demand is to play shortstop with the White Sox, there's Manny Machado and there's Tim Anderson. So I understand that you probably would want to make room for Manny Machado to play short, even though he'd be a better third baseman for them, and that's the bigger need at this point. But we'll see what happens.
You know, we were arguing about who we're most interested in seeing in training camp among the players that are there. And there seems to be two guys that are of most interest to everyone. Obviously, Eloy Jimenez, because he's in camp and he's going to be coming up and he's presumably your future star. But I'm really interested in Yoan Moncada, too. And I'm very curious to see how he does if he breaks through. You know, is this guy the number one prospect in baseball? Is this guy a bust? And, you know, I don't want to dismiss it. 217 strikeouts, very disconcerting. And then the other element is, if Madrigal's flying through the system in the fashion he is this guy going to have to move to third base? I mean, there are issues leaning forward as we look who's coming and who's maybe going that are of interest to me, Chuck.
Yeah, I mean, no matter if they sign Machado or not, there is going to be a position, there's going to be a position battle, and there's going to be some moving chess pieces that are going to have to be taken around the field, around the diamond, and someone might lose a spot, might have to be traded. I mean, this is a very interesting dynamic in play here, because if Madrigal is that hitter that the White Sox are expecting, he was the third overall pick in the draft, he'll be your second baseman, very likely. And Moncada would move to third base if they don't get Machado. As for Moncada, I think that he is going to have a bounce back year. I believe he will. He's not going to have 217 strikeouts. I think the Sox kind of let him learn on the job. You know, I was told in the middle of the season that if the Sox were in this rebuild, Moncada would have been still in AAA. To try to figure things out there, but because they're in a rebuild, let's bring him up to the majors and have him learn up here. And he has the work ethic; he's displayed that work ethic this off season. And he went to the White Sox at the end of the year to say, "What can I do to fix this?" And he has to learn the strike zone. I think his confidence and maybe even his instincts kind of got taken a hit when he was. There were a lot of borderline calls that went against him. I'm not trying to make an excuse for him, but, I mean, it was, like, way up there. It was, like, him and Mike Trout had the most – I believe it was him and Trout who had the most called strike threes that were actually in the zone in the majors or actually out of the zone in the majors. So
it's also Chuck. It's also the only time he's ever been mentioned in the same sentence as Mike Trout.
I'm doing what I can to help Nolan Moncada here. That's what I'm trying to do. I think he's going to come back and have a bounce back here. What is it going to be? If he cuts those 200-something strikeouts down to 150, 160, okay, there's 40, 50 at-bats there where he's doing something else. And when he makes contact, he crushes the ball. And I say it a lot. You look at his doubles, triples, and homers. There's no one, very few, second basemen in the majors last year who had more doubles, triples, and homers than he did. And he's 23, 24 years old. Give him time. I totally get why White Sox fans were on him, are frustrated and concerned about him going forward. But let's see what he does in his second full season in the majors.
Chuck, I really feel like Rick Hahn should be aggressive and go out and find another starting pitcher before the season opens. There's a lot of them out there in free agency. Maybe you make a deal. The depth of the starting rotation, I think, is something that would be worth kind of supplementing. How realistic is that? And if not, what is your rotation right now, 1 through 5?
Yeah, I think it's very realistic that we're going to see a veteran, maybe even two, come in here during spring training to compete for that fifth rotation spot. I've never seen this many empty lockers in the White Sox spring training clubhouse since I've been covering the team in 05. I'm not saying you walk in there and there's empty lockers everywhere. It's nothing like that, but you just can see, like, oh, there's usually a few people over here and over there. And so there's room for them to make a move. There's a lot of guys out there, and if they don't sign anybody, if they don't, I mean, you're looking at a Manny Benuelos. He's someone who they're looking at. The White Sox acquired him from the Dodgers. He's somebody we'll be keeping an eye out for him to be that fifth rotation guy. I think he'd be the leader right now. But adding on to that, you got Ivan Nova, who showed up here yesterday. That's a sneaky trade they made in the offseason. I like him. You've got Lucas Giolito, Carlos Rodon, and Ronaldo Lopez.
That's not the Manny that the White Sox fans want to count on.
Yeah. And keep this in mind, by the way, that Dylan Cease very likely will be up at some point this season, and maybe even Dane Dunning. So, you know, Rick Renteria said when the pitchers and catchers reported a couple days ago, I mean, there's a shift here, and even the words and tone of Renteria, you know, they were not expected to do much last year and the year before, but they now are starting to have the expectation and the belief that a lot of these guys are going to be coming up, the team is going to get better, and there's more competition. And if you don't perform at the level that they expect this year, there's guys behind you who can take your spot, and that's going to be happening more and more going forward. So I'm not saying this team is going to have a winning record necessarily. We'll see. I want to wait and see what happens with Manny Machado and all that stuff and watch the spring training before I have a better clue of what this team can do. But they're not going to lose 100 games. And if they do lose 100 games, that's going to be a problem.
It's interesting because I think that one of the things that happened last year, Chuck, and as you well know, is that the number of injuries, the severity of some of those injuries, and the fact that they were throughout the organization really took some of the wind out of the sails of the rebuild. And, you know, seeing a guy like Kopech come up and show flash and then, boom, he's down. It's difficult, I think, to not put that in the equation. You know, we sit here and we say they got this guy, that guy, and the other guy, and yet, you know, Dunning was hurt, right? I mean, so many different guys have had injuries and gone down with different things that it just, I don't know, it just kind of really bothers you.
Well, this is why you need depth in your organization. You need a lot of talent because you never know on a year-to-year basis who's going to get hurt, who's going to have a down year. So that's why they're just building all this. And, you know, as someone who follows this organization quite acutely, even though there were so many injuries in the minor league system and the major league system, you know, I was really optimistic because there were so many other guys that were having good seasons, whether it was Blake Rutherford had a great year in the minor leagues. And when you see Nick Madrigal come up, and I'm sorry, my mind is, it's early in Arizona. I'm talking with more names. I was really optimistic about a lot of these players that, you know, Luis Gonzalez, there's an outfielder who came out of nowhere. He was a third round pick, but he had really made a big move. Luis Basabe made a big move in the outfield. So, and then there's guys like Zach Thompson, Tyler Johnson, Jimmy Lambert. There's a lot of depth, a lot of great stories that have developed in the minor leagues that are beyond the top 10 flashy prospects that the White Sox have. And I know Luis Robert got hurt and Jake Berger,
right.
But they're back. They're back this year. Berger will be back. I mean, he's
swinging,
way,
right?
He's swinging. I saw him hit. Now, granted, it is in a cage. The ball is on a tee. Okay, I'm not saying this is. I'm watching Babe Ruth here, but when he was swinging, and I'm watching all the guys who are here, major leaguers and minor leaguers. When he swings, the sound the bat and ball make, and how he was hitting off a tee, it was special. Now he has a long way to go to play in a minor league game. They're targeting around June for him, but it's coming back from Achilles injury, so you never know. But there's talent there, and I'll be very interested to see what he does when he's back. So, and Luis Robert is back. So, you know, there were injuries. Mike Rodolfo is coming off a Tommy John surgery, right. But he can hit. He'll start the season as a hitter, DHing, and then he'll play the outfield. And he might be the best defensive outfielder in their entire organization.
Before we let you go, Chuck, how closely are the Sox watching this Manny Machado thing going on, and how long before players tire of the questions? Because I know spring training, and there's not often a lot of other things to talk about.
Secret meetings hurt, Chuck. They hurt people.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. I'm done asking the Manny Machado question until a decision is made. I'm saying that. I hope I can stay true to that, because I these guys don't want to talk about it anymore, I can tell. But you know, I feel like it's a week away. I think next week, that's when you're going to start seeing the serious negotiating that we were hoping for in, like, you know, December. Because that's when position players will be arriving around camp. That's when, you know, you'll be a few, 5-6 days away from the first games. And I could see agents, players, even teams getting a little itchy to get moving here. And you'll see the momentum there. I think now they're just kind of like, okay, let's just do a little... You know, the stare down is continuing. They're still doing some small negotiating. But you know what? I'd love to know the inside story of what's really going on, because from what I've been told, the perception of what's going on and the reality, there's a big gulf there. And, you know, the White Sox would like nothing more than this to be completely muted from the conversation. No one's speculating. There's been a lot of misinformation. So I don't know what's really going on. I've heard little things. I've actually heard a lot of things behind the scenes. And none of it has ever, or I should say very few of it, has come out to be true. So we'll see what happens. I give the Sox a 50-50 chance to get Machado. That's where I'm at right now.
Did everybody look depressed when the secret meeting news broke? That's where I'm at. All right, Chuck. Thanks, pal.
Thanks, Chuck.
All right. See you guys.
Yeah, that secret meeting, it took the wind out of my sails.
Not so
you
secret.
You can't hurt me, Manny.
Yeah, I think he could.
Not so secret.
If the news breaks over the weekend that he signed with the Padres, I think you'll be hurting a little bit.
Yeah, I won't be here on Monday if that happens.
Okay.
Or maybe if it does happen.
Either way.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
But I do think players have obviously a right to have an opinion and how the industry is working right now for them or not working for them, whatever the case might be. And so, you know, I'll leave that to them and how they feel about it.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the Score. That's Rick Renteria, the White Sox manager, talking about what's going on with, shall we call it, the contract impasse. You got two guys waiting to get deals done, and then after that, it seems like everyone will fall in line and there will be many more signings, 100 players.
Yeah, it's the free agent logjam as much as it is an impasse. And I think when you look at why a lot of people, you know, we had the discussion earlier about players' fault, owners' blame. It's a lot of people pointing fingers back and forth. You have Justin Verlander going on social media with a lot of other players talking about the system that's broken, decrying the rise of teams that are tanking, you know, and not using those revenues and sinking them back into baseball. Look, here's some of the numbers that are, I think, worth looking at and kind of, you know, you make your own decision and you draw your own conclusions, because I think it's, you know, some people are going to side with the players and some people are going to side with the owners. But I think there's a problem there and it's growing. $10.8 billion in revenue last year for Major League Baseball. For that's the 16th straight year of record revenue, $10.8 billion. 54% of those revenues go to players, and that's the lowest percentage since 1987. So that's 54% of the revenues, but that's still higher than the NBA, the NHL, and the NFL. So the players get 54% of those revenues. The average salary, I'm sorry, 54% of the revenues go to the players. That's not the lowest since 1987. What happened for the first time since 1987 was the average salary in Major League Baseball went down. But it was very minimal, but it did go down. And the average salary is $4.09 million. And that was a decrease. So you see some of these things going on, and the trend, you know, it's trending toward there's letting the players share in the wealth in a way that is in decline. And that's the players' perspective. The owners are like, well, you know, they're still getting theirs. And I think that there's a disparity there. And you can look at the numbers and interpret them however you want, but I think there's a problem here because 45 players made over $20 million last year in Major League Baseball. 45. That's a ton. So the idea that the players aren't getting paid...
Well, I think that part of the problem is what revenue are we talking about? And the piece of the pie that the players get, they feel, is not anywhere near the amount of money that the owner is making off the team and the amount of money that baseball teams can collect. I know revenue sharing, I understand where they get that pool from, but from a player perspective, they want more, and they want to be they want to feel like their money is going up in the same way the value of franchises is.
Last year was the first time that there was Major League Baseball revenues ever topped $10 billion. Okay, mm-hmm. The game is healthier from that standpoint than it ever has been. It's making more money than ever. So the players are like, well, if you have a 26-year-old player entering its prime and you have two of them on the open market, that's got to be worth what they are projecting it to be worth. I mean, and that's all about a negotiation, but I think that, you know, to them, it's inconceivable that these guys are still looking for contracts that pay them what they feel like they're going to be worth to a franchise, because it goes beyond just on the field stuff. It's branding, it's merchandising, it's the television network that we're discussing. There's value in having a star, somebody that's going to bring eyeballs to the television set, right? You want to have a reason to watch, and these guys give you compelling reasons to watch. They're stars of these networks. They're stars of these teams. So what's that worth?
Yeah, and I get that, David, but I think the other element of this is in order to get your generational wealth, you want guaranteed money over a decade, right? You're not looking for a three-year deal. You're not looking to be Trevor Bauer and take a one-year, I'll just go 1 year at a time. No one wants to do that. They want to know that they're gainfully employed and they got nothing to worry about if their numbers go down, if their season isn't as good, if they turn an ankle, whatever it might be. They want to get paid. They want to be able to go someplace and know they have generational wealth and they can live there and be a part of the team and all the rest of it. That's part of the problem, I think, that when we talk about not collusion,
then
but
compromise, then that's going to come with a compromise.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the Sox had a pretty decent compromise. They're not given 10 years, but reportedly 7 or 8 years to their offer. And that's why the money wasn't at the standard that they wanted. Now, from a player perspective, what they want, I'm in my prime right now, so I want to get my 4 years of prime and I want you to pay 4 more years for me. I want to stay here for as long as I can, and I want to make sure that you don't try to get rid of me whenever I start to fade. It is a really tough thing to sign someone to a 10-year deal, because how do you project the future? How do you know what a guy is going to be, what he is now versus what he's going to become, what he'll be on the back end, how well he takes care of himself? There are once you take the pressure of having to perform away from someone, then you're just going to their character, and well, I don't know that doesn't come into play. I think that
well, I think also
these contracts don't work, David. Let's put it that way.
That's a really interesting point, because what's happened is that you have more teams that believe they can project the future better than they ever have because of the rise in analytics.
Right.
You know, because analytics are valued more, and there's you look at the front offices. You look at the Cubs front office and how many people they just have assigned to that part of the job and that aspect of it. So they feel like those projections are more scientific or based on more data that really matters more than they did when the Angels signed Albert Pujols to a 10-year deal, whatever that was. And so that is you can say that it's justifiable in your mind in 2019, but what's going to happen in 2023 when the decline begins after 30?
Yeah, and Joe, I think, you know, if you come into the office to talk to a guy, don't drink out of a cup and let it sit there, because they're probably going to get a DNA sample and try to project your health as well.
That's what was supposed to be different. That's why everybody thought, or many projected, a 10-year deal, is because you don't see 26-year-olds at this level enter free agency. And it's usually closer to 30, like you guys were saying.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
No personal goals this year. You know, I think my goal this year, like I said, is to be consistent. You know, I don't want to be out there number chasing. You know, I just want to go out there, enjoy the game, and be me. And, you know, I know being me is pretty good. So, you know, just go out there and compete, have fun, and go win some ball games.
Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the Score. That is the voice of Kyle Schwarber. He is the man who hits the Schwarbomb. And let's bring in Jordan Bastian. He writes Cubs for MLB.com. Good morning, Jordan. How are you?
Morning, Jordan.
Good morning. How are you guys doing this morning?
We are living the dream and really been enjoying your work. Let's talk a little bit about some of the stuff you've been writing.
Yeah, welcome to Chicago.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Long time guy getting the work done here in Chicago. You know, I don't know. When I see a guy develop a hitch in his giddy-up, I wonder if that's something that you can continue to do. I thought it was all about trying to repeat your mechanics, and C.J. Edwards is developing something new.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, he's talked about looking at Kenley Jansen in the past, in previous years, but this year, I mean, when he took the mound, you know, I'm still learning all these guys' swings and deliveries from, you know, but watching him, I was like, I'm pretty sure that looks different. It looks like Kenley Jansen. And sure enough, he said, yeah, he went back and he looked at video of Jansen again. And, you know, not to completely copy his mechanics, but sort of incorporate that pause over the rubber to maintain a little bit more balance before driving forward. It's obviously not something you're going to do if you're coming into a runners on situation. You would do it when there's no runners on. And again, he thinks it's going to help him stay balanced, stay focused, and then be able to, again, the goal would be to command the strike zone better, which everyone knows, as electric as his arm is, as great as his stuff is, he needs to be in the strike zone more. And so that he's hoping, you know, you start it off in spring, you work on it, you see if it's effective, and you got 6 weeks to see if it is, and if it's not, you toss it out and go back to the drawing board. So, but yeah, that was an interesting development on the day one of bullpens here.
Jordan, Tyler Chatwood's another pitcher trying to fix something, and I think when you look at what he identified mechanically, he had a jab toward the third baseline, he called it, and he found it in a couple of his former coaches from his past, helped him kind of correct it, and he was dealing with Tommy Hotovy via video. And what did you make of the way he explained it, where he is mentally, and what he can do to maybe carve out a spot in this bullpen if that's where he ends up?
Yeah, I mean, I went back and I tried to look at video of the Rockies from him, and then I tried to look at video of last year, because Joe Maddon said it's going to be a subtle change, it's going to be hard to see, and it was hard to see exactly what the difference was from what we saw here the other day versus, you know, maybe what he was doing before. It's so slight, but he says it's, you know, a lot of times with these pitchers, it can be something so minute that just causes a negative chain reaction. He thinks they have identified it. Everyone looks good in bullpens, right? Oh, he looked great on day one, you know, but they got him on the mound that's rigged with the high-speed cameras and to gather all the pitch data so he can go back and look at it. And you're going to be seeing a lot of guys running through those mounds so they can get that data. And he's going to be an important one because he's going to want to make sure that what he's feeling is matching up with what the Cubs are seeing, and the real test is going to come in games, you know, to see if he, kind of like CJ, like we talked about, is commanding that strike zone, you know, cutting down on that walk rate, because this is a guy with great stuff. I liked the mentality. You know, he didn't come in day one and said, I'm ready for a bullpen role. He came in and said, you know, I want to be a starter. I'm a starting pitcher. Now, obviously, you look at the landscape, and there's no room for him if everyone's healthy. That's the reality of the situation. But you don't want to see a guy conceding that already. I think that says something about the type of mentality that he's trying to take here of, you know, trying to prove his way back into the picture. But there's no room in the inn right now, and even that bullpen field's pretty crowded. So that'll be an interesting one to follow throughout the spring.
Well, that's, you know, we were discussing it a little bit earlier today, this idea that he sees himself as a starter, he believes he's a starter. That's his only role, because if a guy has control
right.
problems, how do you bring him in to a high-leverage situation? How do you bring him into any situation?
Right, unless you think you can, by minimizing the exposure, you can maximize the results. You know, that maybe if he can hone it in for a batter or two, you know, then, you know, you're right, though. It's a fine line. You know, if you're walking a lot of guys, can you trust him to come in and minimize that in a shorter pitch load type scenario? That's a great question. It's a great question. They're going to have a lot of time here to analyze and break down. But starting's what he's done, starting what he wants to do. As the roster's currently configured, it doesn't look like starting's what he's going to be doing.
Would they go to a six-man rotation? I mean, just off the top of my head, they got
no way.
Age on some of those guys. I mean, Lester yeah. and Cole Hamill. I agree with the no way, but that might be a solution if he was worth it.
No, I don't think there's going to be any talk of that, especially when you're looking at a rotation chock full of veterans and guys that,
yeah.
not saying they're going to do it, but guys who could log 180 to 200 innings to a man. I just don't think you that's the type of rotation that you're going to try and squeeze a six guy into. And if it is a six
especially
guy, it's
him.
Going to be Montgomery.
Especially
yeah,
him,
exactly.
yeah. Talking with Jordan Bastian, covers the Cubs for MLB.com. Jordan, yesterday I think it was Jason Hayward was talking about the Cubs' decision and from the front office to stand pat in the offseason, and he said that they had earned that right. That group had been to, you know, the playoffs four consecutive years, and they had earned the right to kind of reinvest hope and faith in that core. And just wonder what you thought of that decision and maybe that approach, because, you know, you're covering the Cubs for the first time, you come into that clubhouse for the first time, what your impressions are of this veteran group that has done a lot of winning but is coming into this season sort of with a chip on its shoulder.
Yeah, I mean, I was covering the Indians for 8 years, so I was there when the Cubs won the whole thing. You know, so I have, you know, I got to see this team at its best during that World Series, and, you know, everyone thought that was the start of multiple World Series runs, and it hasn't come to fruition. The talk of the roster being mostly unchanged, it's an interesting dynamic, because from the players you hear, hey, I love that they're showing trust in the group in place, but all offseason it was really, we don't have the budget room to go out and make any wholesale changes to this roster. But you like that the players are coming in and not focusing on the financial aspect of it and saying, no, we have what it takes. We have the guys in this room. And they're not wrong. They do have a winning team and a team that's proved that they can win in the playoffs. It's just the last couple of years, and especially last year down the stretch, you know, it just didn't happen for them. But again, you know, you're in this early spring part of the season when mindset and optimism are abundant. And so I think you're looking for the type of approach that guys are taking mentally. Like I said, Chatwood saying he's a starter. Okay, he's not conceding the bullpen stuff yet. Players saying the front office is trusting us. Okay, they're taking that type of view to this financial situation for this team. Those are little things that I think you're starting to see seeds being planted for this group and the messaging being planted by the front office of that sense of urgency, and a lot of the things you're hearing out of the players are sort of backing up that line of talk. Again, it's going to happen when the games come. That's when you're really going to see some of this come to fruition and see some of these storylines play out.
Covering the Indians, I'm sure you dealt with Trevor Bauer. And
yes, I did.
I dislike him immensely as a Sox fan. But let me just ask you, his idea, it's out there now, thinks he's going to go year to year. I guess his feelings were hurt in arbitration. How insane is Trevor Bauer, I guess, would be the question.
you know, this has been a big topic conversation in the workroom here too. You know, as a reporter, I loved him. I never had nothing to write about with this guy. You know, you can say what you want about his opinions and his views. He owns them. You know, he's out front and with it, and it's not like he's unaware. He's probably one of the most self-aware people I've ever been around. He's talked for years about this year-to-year approach to contracts. It actually stems from a bet he has with a friend of his from way back when, and he's trying to stick to it. And yeah, I think I read some of the articles. I haven't talked to Trevor in the last couple of days, but yeah, I read some of the stories about this arbitration process, and the part that he really kind of griped about was, and it wasn't the Indians, it was the labor relations department who brought this to the table, was arguing about this charitable endeavor that he did last year. He did 69 days of giving, and it was $420.69 every day to a charity over 69 days. He did the jokey aspect of it because he thought that would grab more attention and get more people to write about it, even if it's a negative way of going about it. But he wanted to actually do a good thing and give charities money each day to raise awareness for a lot of groups that are doing a lot of great things. But it was like, are there better ways to go about this? So that's where he got criticized in the what he called character assassination portion of his arbitration hearing. But he's an interesting guy. I learned a lot about pitching from long discussions with him. I got to go up the Driveline with him up in Seattle last year and kind of take a peek behind the curtain. You're seeing a lot of the stuff similar here with the Cubs, with the Edgertronic cameras and the Rapsodo pitch data units. You know, all that stuff has been going on in Driveline for a long time. And he's an interesting guy, that's for sure. We could talk an hour about Bauer alone, right?
any Trevor Bauers in the Cubs clubhouse? Any guys that you've met so far that kind of intrigue you and you think could be, you know, compelling personalities that you're getting to know? And what are your early impressions of Joe Maddon?
Yeah, I mean, I'm coming from Terry Francona, so I'm going from one awesome, quotable manager to the next. I've enjoyed the Joe stories, which will be new to me this year. Some of these other guys might hear some of these anecdotes, for multiple times. I'll be enjoying them for the first time, so I enjoyed that. the locker room, I haven't really gotten to know many players yet. I'm still in that process, but I know some of the guys here. I know Brian Butterfield on the coaching staff, so I talked to him yesterday, and that'll be one of the fun parts of this new job, even as a 14-year beat guy, to walk in and kind of rebuild that rapport. I'm like, hey, Joe Maddon's got that rookie energy. I do too, right?
I enjoyed the Brandon Morrow stuff too, and it's very interesting because I think a lot of people are nervous about what's going to happen at the closer position, and certainly mm-hmm. Stroppe starts, but the ultimate plan is Morrow.
Yeah, we talked to Stroop yesterday, and he kind of laughed when someone asked him about, your thoughts on being the closer to start the year. He said, did Joe say I'm the closer? everyone kind of laughed, but he said he likes it because he doesn't feel alone in the bullpen. He's got C-Sheck, he's got, they brought in Brad Brock. They've got guys down there with closing experience. So he said he likes that going into the year. Yeah, he's going to be the guy until Morrow gets back or maybe even beyond, based on how Brandon's doing. But he says that he likes that he doesn't feel that he's like the only option for the late innings. There will be some mixing and matching in that first month for sure, not just in the closer role, but I just mean in those late innings to get there. You hope the starters can go deep, but sometimes in April when they're still building up, that's not the case. So it's going to be an interesting month to watch, see how that plays out. And then it will be intriguing to see when Morrow does come back. How's he throwing? What's his velocity look like? How's he bouncing back? Will he jump right into a closing role, or do they need to ease him in? And those are all things that we'll see play out over the next, 2 months, basically.
Jordan, thanks a ton. Really appreciate you getting up with us, and really enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks, Jordan. Enjoy Arizona.
No problem. Anytime, guys.
That's Jordan Bastian writing Cubs for MLB.com.
He's really good. Really good. Yeah, he's really solid pro. He has write some good stuff. He covered the Indians for a long time, as he pointed out, and he was there in the 2016 World Series. I remember that.
Let's get ready for Dan and Connor. We'll bring in Dan Bernstein and Connor McKnight. Next, it's Mully and Hall on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.